Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Now, I've mentioned it so many times over the last little while because I've been so looking forward to this conversation, but our book club is finally back. And this time we are talking about Bad Blood, Secrets and Lies in a Silicon Valley Startup by John Carreyrou. Cameron Hill and Kira Tracy are with me now. Guys, how are you?
Great, thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, thank you. Looking forward to this.
I'm Cameron and I have spoken about this a few times on the floor. We've both been itching to have this conversation. When I picked this book, I said, this is one of my favourite books and I have gone back to it multiple times. I've listened to the audiobook. I have read the physical book. I have it on my Kindle. And the reason I go back to it so often is because there is so much to it, right? It is an incredible masterclass in investigative journalism. There's suspense. There's, you know, corporate madness. There's bullying. There's character development. It's kind of like the ultimate thriller, but crammed into reporting on something that is completely true. Cameron, how familiar were you with the story of Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos from the outset?
I'd heard it kind of anecdotally. It's become in the last few years kind of a byword for just disaster and like investor gullibility. Mm-hmm. And as we'll probably get into the nature of Silicon Valley and, oh, this is the first big failure and it's great that finally they're being brought down to earth kind of thing. I didn't really know the intricacies of it or just how much of a buy-in there was. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that it was effectively an investigative journalism piece by the Wall Street Journal and Carreyrou that eventually brought it down.
Yeah.
And this is written like prophecy as well, which is interesting. This book comes out in 2018, if
yes,
I'm not mistaken, and a lot has happened since then.
Yeah.
And it reads in a kind of prophetic, I wonder what's going to happen to Elizabeth Holmes and Sonny Hawani after this. I'd love to read an updated version, a revised version at this point, but I absolutely loved it. There were so many strands. It kind of plods along. Mm-hmm. And then the last 50 pages are just this roller coaster of, I love a good legal battle.
Yes, so do I.
And it's like why A Few Good Men is one of my favorite films. And I love just the pace that it takes towards the end where you're fighting and they're getting to the sources and such and such. And yeah, it just combines that kind of Silicon Valley arrogance with investor gullibility and the idea of, who's going to be the next Steve Jobs? Like, Steve Jobs has such a spectral presence throughout this book.
Yeah.
It's so interesting.
It is fascinating. And Kira, that brings us back to our last book club, which focused on the autobiography of Steve Jobs' daughter.
Yes.
And we found that really compelling because it was quite a human, very empathetic, kind of soft expose of what it's like to be related to a tech genius.
Yeah.
And we'll do a summary of Elizabeth Holmes in a quick second, but she was someone who idolized Jobs. And it's that interesting correlation between the bits, the dickish bits of his personality,
yeah,
seem to be what she tried to emulate when she started to get a little bit successful.
I know, it's actually crazy. And it's really interesting hearing you guys talk about the legal side and the tech side, whereas that kind of, I'm like, I take a back seat. I kind of gravitate towards the sociological side. So that is exactly my bread and butter, mm-hmm, Jess. I found it so interesting, the kind of persona she created and the way it really changed when the shit hit the fan.
Yeah.
If I can say that. You know, this kind of, again, I was just telling you before, the victim culture, the villainy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would never believe this was a piece of actual nonfiction.
Yeah.
Because of just how crazy it is.
There are so many twists and turns. And for those of you, like we have spoken about it, Emmett Ryan has been on this program with me, particularly when Elizabeth Holmes, when the trial was going on, and we spoke about the case at length. But just to summarise briefly, Elizabeth Holmes was this young, brilliant woman who was incredibly ambitious. She developed an idea, a notion for technology that would essentially allow you to take comprehensive blood tests with just a prick of the finger. And she was adamant that she wanted the device to be a certain size, work at a certain speed, but not compromise on the types of tests it could do. And she went from strength to strength. She collated a massive, almost Taylor Swift level of squad to back her and endorse her and all the rest. But as we now know, Theranos did not succeed. In terms of the book, jumping into the book, What were your initial impressions as Elizabeth Holmes was introduced as a character? Because it starts off from a pretty pacey place, this book. And bit by bit, you're kind of learning little bits and pieces about Elizabeth Holmes as she was at the very beginning.
Yeah, it felt like a kind of, she was following a certain beaten path that Jobs had sort of created. You know, you go into the bits around her being this college dropout and having this idea, and kind of, they go into the whole thing of she wanted to be a billionaire and that was her big ambition. And immediately you get a red flag and you think, okay, this doesn't sound like it's going to end particularly well.
Mm.
She seemed idealistic and ideological, and certainly it's that enthusiasm for her idea and the optimism that seems to have been infectious to so many people that you get swept up in too. I found it, oh, this is interesting that she's so bought into this idea, and I'd be convinced by her. Like, that's one thing you get throughout the book until she kind of takes a backseat and David Boies becomes the arch villain. That you, if you were in a room, you could understand why she was so charming.
Yeah.
Why she was able to get so many people on her side and be basically the yin to Sonny's yang, where he's the mad dog about it, but she's the kind of beguiling, very romanticized inventor and someone putting forward this idea of, look how much we can change the world. And basically the prophet for what Silicon Valley always tries to do, which is be the agent of change.
Yeah. You've summed that up so well. I think the persona that she wanted to put out there is exactly what people want to see.
Mm.
Intelligent, young female looking to change the world. She had certain anecdotes that she would tell and retell about her fear of blood and, you know, wanting to make that process less painful. But Kira, what struck me the first time I read this was, as a young woman who was working in the media from a very young age, I could completely empathize with her thinking that she needs to change her persona to fit in. The changing of her voice and dressing in black.
Yeah.
Yes, it was based on Steve Jobs, but it's also because it was a male-dominated field as well.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's hard to sympathize too much just because of...
But the human thing does kick in,
the human
right?
thing does, you know, it's difficult. You are being in a boardroom as well. And, you know, she's an attractive woman too. And I feel like that probably was the first thing men noticed rather than the intelligence, which undoubtedly she had, Jesus. But something I found really interesting, the difference between her and Jobs from a gender perspective, I feel like, again, this is just from small fry, what we read through Steve Jobs' daughter's perspective. But I feel like the way they carried harm, the way they treated people, especially in the end, I feel like he was very mean, directly cruel, whereas she was a bit more malicious and conniving. Mm. And I feel like they are very gendered. You know, it's very interesting. She victimized herself. She would say, well, I'm a woman. That's why people are coming for me right now. Whereas he never had to, you know, use his gender as a reason for that, which I found fascinating. So there really is that kind of, I feel like, without getting too political, but that kind of white woman victimhood, whereas a white man doesn't necessarily have to use that. His power's implied, whereas she had to really use her identity as a reason for protecting herself.
Yeah, it is fascinating to see it. The other big character in this book, of course, is Sonny Balwani, who we will... I'm going to give you an update on where Elizabeth and Sonny are later on, but there's a menacing presence about him from the very first mention of his name, isn't there?
Yeah, I loved... It was something you flagged. It's like, wait until you get to Sonny and you start seeing him come into it. And he's kind of shrouded in mystery when we first meet him. We're not really 100% sure where he came from. They knew he came from money. And the sort of... the way that Carrie Rue writes it in terms of, oh, watch out for this guy and watch out for the nature of their relationship, because that's not immediately obvious to pretty much anyone they ever meet, is the romantic aspect of their partnership and the problematic connotations of that afterwards and consequences of it. But he becomes just this figure of ridicule eventually, where you just see any time... What's great about the book is they detail for ages each individual employee who comes in sort of starry-eyed, I want to help this really worthy cause. And soon broken down by the culture and the idea of everything being so secretive and the Chinese walls that are everywhere throughout Terranos. And it almost follows a pattern of they get disenfranchised and then I want to leave and Sonny has an outburst and basically tears them to shreds. And it's terrible, but I really enjoyed every time it happened because you're like, you're such a parody of yourself. It's incredible.
He is, you know, he's someone who was incredibly successful, very, very wealthy, well-traveled, well-connected, but he's every corporate employee's worst nightmare because he carries that ego alongside his money and his experience, and he uses the power of intimidation and his reputation to bully his way left, right and centre. And the way some of the anecdotes that Kerry Rue outlines of employees being fired or even when they go in to raise a concern and he just flips the lid, it's terrifying.
That's Steve Jobs.
But it's so funny. Like, there's a description of him being an erratic man-child of limited intellect and an even more limited attention span.
Love that.
Which it's such a great summation because later on, employees start to figure out that they can get through or pass Sonny by making these really convoluted presentations at one point that he just goes, signs off on. He's clearly not listening, but it means that they survive another day. So the way they outsmart this incredibly volatile, but as they say, a bit dim and dim-witted character is quite adventure booky in a way. They're starting to evade this terrible, terrible demon.
Yeah. But I think they had to survive, because early on in the book, there are examples outlined where, you know, they're going off to do demos to showcase this technology. It's not working on site in whatever country they're in. And so they're lying and making up, you know, the staff are being put in this position where they have to lie and make stuff up to survive. That is pretty terrifying. And you can, again, understand the pressure that the staff were under. But I just found it baffling that they weren't called out.
Can we talk about the scale of what Elizabeth Holmes promised the world?
Yeah.
Not just revolutionising technology, but the medical care, healthcare. Like, this was actually meant to be something, you know, that was going to change lives, potentially the way the US looked at healthcare. And it had the government backing. Mm-hmm. The lies, the scale of the lies, saying the military had been testing it and passed off on it. Like, it was actually crazy. Like, baffling. Sorry, even talking about it is baffling.
Yeah.
You know, the scale. So yeah, completely unfair. And I feel like Sonny and Elizabeth's relationship and the way Sonny went about things, I think was a microcosm of the whole company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, secrets, aggression, villainy. You know, that's from the main players anyway. George Schultz, that baffled me.
Yeah.
You know, someone who can be described as someone who, like, helped end the Cold War during the Reagan era, backing it to the point where his own grandson, Tyler Schultz?
Yes. So this is something that we need to talk about. It is the backing the company received.
Mm.
And again, please, if you haven't read the book, go and read the book, because it is just, it's like a who's who of every world, whether it's celebrity, politics, whatever you're thinking. They got behind this. And I'm just wondering, is that all down to Elizabeth Holmes' charm? Was she that much of an intriguing figure that people just bought into wanting this technology to exist first and foremost, but then also believing that she was this tortured genius who could transform healthcare entirely?
Oh, completely. I think there's multiple parts to that. I do think if you look at the example of Steve Bird, how much he wanted to get Safeway in, and this, he completely bought in and had to, again, like so many people in the book, lie through his teeth to his board constantly saying, no, it's coming, because Elizabeth's promised it's coming. So there is that aspect of they just want to buy into her. And they even describe, Kerry Rue gives a definition for FOMO, and that feels like exactly what everybody's doing. They do not want to miss out on this revolutionary idea.
Yeah.
But it's also this idea of effective altruism and just putting your money into basically an idea that sounds good. There's a really good book called Doing Good Better about this, where they talk about the play pump in Africa, which was designed as this kind of play toy, kind of a roundabout that kids would push and it would pump out water, and loads of people invested in this. The Obamas were a few, and I think Yeah, some really high profile people. Anyway, the thing was completely useless. Nobody wanted to push a pump all day. Kids got too tired to use it. But it's the backing because it sounds like such a good idea and has a great story. And Theranos seems to have been along that same line of this sounds like a great idea. I don't really understand most of the tech. And when you have that, when you have gullible investors who are willing to just buy into the idea, paired with technicians who at one point are described as engineers for whom patient care was an abstract concept. That's a recipe for disaster. And it could be, we haven't even got into the ethical part of just, they treated this like an algorithm or an equation that could be solved rather than actual human beings being behind their equations and their problems.
But this is the bit that, like, the whole thing is outrageous, right? But the example that I alluded to earlier on, when a former Apple employee who comes to work for Theranos goes with Sunny to do a demo, and then she realizes that the technology is being used on patients who have real life illnesses. She raises concerns and she ends up leaving the company because she is so uncomfortable with it. And I think what this book highlighted for me throughout the book, not just with that one example, but there are whistleblowers and there are people who come out and don't just sit there and watch bad things happen. Now, a fair few people didn't necessarily, you know, blow the whistle. They just removed themselves from that situation. But the extent of what went on, I don't think would have happened, firstly, without those people who did blow the whistle. And then secondly, without brilliant people like John Kerryrew who put the legwork in to get this comprehensive story together.
Absolutely. And there's the people who leave the company, there's the people who stay, and then there's the absolutely tragic case of Ian Gibbons that we read about, which was a real shocking moment. That was something that stopped me in my tracks reading about that, just this guy who dedicated his whole life to the craft and is sucked into the vortex of Theranos and ends up, it ends up costing him his life. So I found that interesting, and it's a great case, as you say, about whistleblowing. Mentioned it earlier, it's a good case study in Silicon Valley's attitude to problems.
Yeah.
And the thing that it reminded me of in many ways is the Brian Johnson kind of immortality studies that are going on in Silicon Valley right now, where he's taking the plasma of his teenage son to extend his own life, his blood boy, as he calls him.
Notions.
Totally. It goes into this whole idea of Silicon Valley saying, hey, aging, can we stop that? Mm-hmm. Let's stop that. And this complete arrogance of, like, being able to apply their coding and computer knowledge to something like medicine, because, you know, how easy could that be? You know.
But I do think, like, if you scrape everything back, right, the notion of Theranos, even though it's not real, the notion of what it could potentially have done would have been transformational. And the whole point of this very program is to talk about inventions and innovations that are transformational. A few weeks ago, we did a piece about digital health records.
Yeah.
While it's not the same, it is a technological application of something that could transform and enhance the lives of every person in this country. Mm-hmm. So I could kind of see how and why people bought into it, because you also want to buy into it, right?
And it was very much achievable. If they just, like, made a few concessions in design where they didn't have to have it on this tiny little filament.
And that's where the ego comes in.
Yeah.
Is that Elizabeth Holmes did not want to compromise. She essentially wanted a blood reader that would kind of be like an iPod.
Yeah.
Because she was so obsessed with the Apple design. And it's the lack of compromise that I think was the ultimate downfall here, because anyway, we could go on for days. Keir, I just wanted to ask you, what did you make of the John Kerryrew's style of writing? Because I mentioned at the top that this is parts thriller. It's obviously factual.
Yeah.
It's, you know, memory recollection. I loved reading it. What did you make of it?
You know, it's actually interesting you say that, saying to Cameron this morning. I actually listened to it, which I never do. So this is me actually delving into it. And it felt like a true crime podcast. It genuinely did. But it's so interesting how, you know, it is so factual, and it was just, it felt like you were really delving into the character, and I say that in quotations. The quirks, like Elizabeth Holmes, she was scared of needles.
Yeah.
Didn't like blood, squeamish. And you do see the charm and charisma in that. It's just written, it's written like fiction. Well, it read like fiction in my head. It was absolutely fascinating. The romance, the whirlwind, the lies, the deceit. And you know what it really reminds me of? Because they obviously did make Dropout.
Yes.
The Amanda Seyfried TV show on it, mm-hmm. which I actually am dying. I want to see it in
it's quite good,
Technicolor
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
But it also really reminds me, going off topic slightly, but this is just so exciting. It really reminds me of Dope Sick.
Yes. Yeah. yeah. Dope Sick is fantastic.
I actually got the two of them based on real stories. Mm-hmm. You know, I really see this vision as something so similar to the opioid crisis in the US. This idea from every level of society, investors, doctors, trusted members of society were putting their trust and telling the people, you can trust this design. Millions, you know, came in and out of that industry. Mm. And it did affect lives. And sure, people were expecting blood results. It's terrifying, you know, yep. putting lives were in people's hands that should not have been.
No, and I think it is now the... it's kind of like the shorthand for talking about what you don't want to be in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And I think it really opened people's eyes to the we don't want to be the next Theranos. And it also caused an awful lot of people from an investor point of view, from a journalist point of view.
Public trust
point of view to kind of question and then question again everything that claimed to be the second coming. Just briefly, because we're up against the clock here, but just to update you all, if you didn't follow the case, Elizabeth Holmes was convicted in January 2022 on 4 counts of fraud and conspiracy. She is serving 11 years at a minimum security prison in Texas and is expected to be out by 2032. Sunny Balwani was sentenced to almost 13 years in prison. And there's now calls, I think I read this in June, for that to actually be extended to 15 years.
He won't like that.
He won't like that. But that does show you the severity of it. If you've a bit of time at some stage over the next few days, go onto YouTube and watch the tapes of Elizabeth Holmes testifying, giving her evidence around the inquiries and the investigations that went on into Theranos and the ethics of the company and what really went on and the defrauding of investors and so on. It's, again, a masterclass in how not to behave, but it is fascinating. As I said, we could go on for much longer, but unfortunately we're out of time. So would we recommend this book?
Oh, yes.
100%.
Consume it in every way you can.
Yes.
Listen to it, read it.
So, so good.
I'm going to watch Dropout now.
Yes.
Like I'm itching to. I think Seyfried's probably a great actress for the role as well.
She does it so well. It's actually kind of unnerving how
good
she is.
Oh my God.
Okay, well look, there is a recommendation for you. It is Bad Blood, Secrets and Lies in a Silicon Valley Startup by John Kerry-Roux. Cameron, you're picking the book for next month?
Yeah, so Yuval Noah Harari, who people might be familiar with from Sapiens, has a new book out called Nexus, charting the development of information from Stone Age to our modern day and artificial intelligence, with a big emphasis on how our information technology and communications networks influenced the rise of Stalinism and Nazism and populism today. So
wow.
I think it's particularly prescient.
Okay, that is going to be our next book club pick. You've got 4 weeks to pick it up, digest it, form an opinion and share your thoughts. You can do so by emailing techtalk@newstalk.com. But for now, Cameron Hill and Kira Tracy, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.